In this video, we're talking about capitalism as the system of objectivity from Chapter 11 of Leonard Peikoff's book, Objectivism, the Philosophy of Ayn Rand. Stay tuned. Let's start out with a summary. So here we're getting, or what we've seen is that capitalism is the only moral social system. And here we're getting a deeper perspective on that fact. Capitalism is the moral system because it's the objective system. It's the system based on objectivity. Virtue and objectivity, Leonard points out, are two aspects of the same issue. They're both about the proper volitional relationship between consciousness and existence, where virtue is stressing action and objectivity is stressing cognition. The validation of capitalism follows an objective method. We reduce politics to morality, which is itself reduced to perception, as we talked about when we discussed morality. And so in short, it's that capitalism is moral because it's geared to the requirements of a reality-oriented consciousness. And the way Leonard puts it is capitalism protects objective rights by means of objective law. And so then he's going to look at capitalism from different perspectives and show in what respects it's objective through and through. And one of the main areas where this comes up is in the issue of objective value, and so, or economic value rather. And he argues that economic value is objective, that prices emerge not from the need of buyers or the greed of sellers, but from the conjunction of two evaluations, i.e. by the voluntary agreement of sellers and buyers. And so each individual assesses the value of a product for his own life, given his own needs, goals, his particular context. Now, to fully grasp in what sense this is objective, Leonard brings in a crucial distinction from Ayn Rand between the philosophically objective and the socially objective. Philosophically objective value means value estimated by, quote, the criterion of the most rational mind possessing the greatest knowledge in a given category, in a given period, and in a defined context. The free market value of goods, Rand observes, does not necessarily represent their philosophically objective value, but only their socially objective value, i.e. the sum of the individual judgments of all men involved in trade at a given time, the sum of what they valued each in the context of his own life. So capitalism doesn't guarantee that everyone is objective. You can't guarantee that because it's a volitional issue. But it guarantees that they can be objective, and the system rewards objectivity and penalizes non-objectivity, and thus moving the socially objective in the direction of the philosophically objective. Typically, capitalism is viewed as non-objective. Economic value is seen as arbitrary, and people with economic power are seen as being able to just set the terms and thereby exploit everyone else. And what we get is instead that the reality is the economically powerful don't get to arbitrarily set the terms of a trade, so that when force is absent, free trade is free. Businessmen who overcharge customers lose them. Businessmen who underpay workers lose them. And that profits, too, fit this pattern, that they're not determined by exploitation or arbitrary fiat, but by creating outputs that are more valuable, more valued by market participants than the inputs that went into creating them. And so profits and money more generally are the insignia of value creation. The biggest flaw in this view that the powerful under capitalism are exploiters is the failure to distinguish between economic power and political power. And so we get that economic power is real power. It's the power to offer rewards or not, but that it's fundamentally different from political power, the power to force people to act against their will. Economic power then isn't a threat to others, it's actually an aid. Because just as we benefit when others have more knowledge than we do, so we benefit when they have more wealth. That's because wealth is not zero sum. It's not a fixed pie. It's created. And the more wealth others create, the better and the more that we can achieve. And we get that indeed, there's a pyramid of ability where the most productive, creative people don't exploit those below, but are the great benefactors of those below. And so this is a crucial quote from Ayn Rand. She says, material products can't be shared. They belong to some ultimate consumer. It is only the value of an idea that can be shared with unlimited numbers of men, making all sharers richer at no one's sacrifice or loss, raising the productive capacity of whatever labor they perform. In proportion to the mental energy he spent, the man who creates a new invention receives but a small percentage of his value in terms of material payment, no matter what fortune he makes, no matter what millions he earns. But the man who works as a janitor in the factory producing that invention receives an enormous payment in proportion to the mental effort that his job requires of him. So it's that capitalism, far from being a system of clashing interests and exploitation, it's a system of harmony of interests, and where we each benefit from other successes at discovering knowledge and creating wealth. And to the extent we're objective, we benefit to the objectivity of others. By contrast, it's to the extent that we're non-objective, we are penalized by reality, and we can't penalize those who are objective. We can't inflict the consequences of our irrationality onto others. And so the way Leonard wraps this up is saying, he says, capitalism is a corollary, the fundamentals of philosophy. Whoever understands capitalism sees it as the social system flowing from the axiom that existence exists, just as whoever understands the axiom sees it ultimately as the principle entailing capitalism. So I want to take a step back and ask, what's the purpose of this section? And one way to think about it is in terms of getting at the contrast. Like, what is the view ultimately that's being argued against? And so if the previous section on the morality of capitalism was answering the claim that capitalism is ruled by selfish whims, it's that capitalism is viewed by selfish whims. And what's then the essence of the objectivist answer? It's that capitalism isn't ruled by irrational exploiters, but by thinker producers. And so we're getting the way in which the whole way that capitalism functions is according to thought, by protecting and promoting and rewarding rational, objective thought. And then you could think, all right, well, why is this issue difficult? Like, why isn't that obvious to everyone? In understanding capitalism, you're trying to unpack really complex relationships: buyer and seller, employer employee, lender borrower. And you're dealing with a complex phenomenon that's mediating these relationships: money. And so if you take yourself back to the beginnings of capitalism, you have this new phenomenon, including the modern corporation, all these technologies, completely new relationships. And indeed, these corporations rival governments in terms of wealth and their impact on the world. And so what's the model that people have for understanding human relationships? That they're going to bring into trying to unravel this new phenomenon of capitalism? Mainly it's feudal relationships, which are based on political power and exploitation. And so there's a real question that people face, which is, well, how do we conceptualize all this new stuff that's going on? And what we get from this section in OPAR is, in effect, if you try to conceptualize it through an intrinsicist or subjectivist lens, then you're going to end up opposing capitalism, or at least you'll end up selling it out, whether or not that's your intention, because the whole perspective that one has to bring to it is one of objectivity, of the fact that reason is man's basic means of survival, and of grasping from an individualist pro-reason perspective how this new system functions. And so I want to spend some time focusing on what I think is the core issue that what one would have to unravel in order to have a proper understanding of capitalism, and that is market value or economic value and the objectivity of that. two recommendations at the outset. So first, Ankar Gatte has a piece in the Blackwell Companion to Ayn Rand, a chapter called Free Minds and Free Markets. And then in Foundations of a Free Society, which is an Ayn Rand Society book, Rob Tarr has what's really a tour de force on economics and integrating it with objectivism called Economic Theory and Conceptions of Value. So those are super highly recommended. But the goal of this is, our goal here is understanding economic value, which means value in exchange. And before we do that, let's just kind of remind ourselves briefly of objectivism's conception of objectivity in general. So it's that objectivity is fundamentally a kind of process. Its root is the recognition that consciousness doesn't create facts, but recognizes them, and that recognizing them requires an active volitional process. It requires deliberately following a fact-based method of logic. And to say that logic is a fact-based method, it's that there's no contradictions in reality, so there can be no contradictions in thought, that we have to organize the material provided by our senses according to this basic fact of reality, that A is A. Well, then, so if objectivity is primarily a kind of process, we can also speak of products of such a process as objective. Objective knowledge is knowledge reached by an objective thought process. And we can say the same thing about values. Values are objective when they're reached by a fact-based process of evaluation. So if you remember the way that Leonard put it, it was the good designates facts, the requirements of survival, as identified conceptually and then evaluated by human consciousness in accordance with a rational standard of value, life. And more generally, any process of evaluation is objective if it involves logically evaluating something according to a rational standard of value. So economic value, it represents a new phenomenon to understand because you're not looking any longer at a single person's estimate of how valuable something is to his life. You're not saying, like, did he, you know, Joe follow a fact-based method in deciding that, yeah, this tree branch can be carved into a spear for me to fish or something. We're looking at an evaluation that is the product of multiple people making multiple decisions, and where we don't actually know in many cases the mental process that each person went through. And indeed, it's more complicated than that because we can have reason to think that some were not objective. So if you have somebody who pays tens of millions of dollars for a Jackson Pollock painting, you probably think, well, that is not a very objective thing to do, given that this is non-objective art, i.e. from the objectivist perspective, garbage. Or take a different kind of case. What do we make of the fact that, to borrow examples from Ayn Rand, true crime novels outsell Victor Hugo, or that lipstick generates more sales revenue than microscopes? And we could very well be tempted to conclude, well, economic value, market value, is subjective. It's just things are worth whatever people think that they're worth or feel that they're worth. And so maybe the government should step in and ensure that economic value is objective. And the essence of the objectivist view is that economic value is not determined by whims, or as Leonard puts it, neither the greed of sellers nor the need of buyers, but by the voluntary judgment of individuals, each assessing value in the context of his or her own life. So the way Ayn Rand puts it is, the free market represents the social application of an objective theory of values. Since values are to be discovered by man's mind, men must be free to discover them, to think, to study, to translate their knowledge into physical form, to offer their products for trade, to judge them and to choose, be it material goods or ideas, a loaf of bread or a philosophical treatise. Since values are established contextually, every man must judge for himself in the context of his own knowledge, goals, and interests. Since values are determined by the nature of reality, it is reality that serves as men's ultimate arbiter. If a man's judgment is right, the rewards are his. If it is wrong, he is his only victim. So why is it socially objective? Because the point is not that every market participant is necessarily objective. As Leonard talks about. Like, no system can guarantee that. But the point is that each person can be objective because they're left free, and that the system protects and encourages objectivity. And that's what Rand is stressing when she's saying that under capitalism, it's ultimately, you know, reality that determines. Like, you get rewards if you're right, and if you're wrong, you'll get penalized, and you can't impose those penalties on other people who are being objective. So you can make a distinction, or you, in the end, have to make a distinction between what it means for an individual to be objective about how valuable something is to them and what the market decides is the economic value of something. But what you have to get is that neither of those, neither the philosophically nor the socially objective value of something, is driven by whims. So, like, what would it actually mean to have economic value determined by whims? Well, it would be either, like, the Pope declares that the really, you know, true price is X. And that's kind of the intrinsicist approach, where some authority is going to just dictate it. Or if I said, for instance, you know, my copy of Equals Unfair, signed by me and Euron, that's worth $100,000, even though no one actually will pay that. And that's kind of the subjectivist view. Or you could think of a more realistic example. It's the person who says, I have no experience, no skills, but I'm worth more than $15 an hour. And it's, well, no, just because you feel that you should get paid more than $15 an hour doesn't mean that your labor is worth that. It doesn't mean that other people in the market actually value it. That's subjectivism. Economic value is objective because it identifies what individuals are actually willing to pay, what they're actually willing to offer for something in exchange, how much they genuinely value a product or service. So to make sure this is clear, let's return to our puzzles. So with the Jackson Pollock painting, the price is determined by what people are willing to offer for it in exchange based on their evaluation of its worth. And so philosophically, we can say, yeah, this is garbage, or maybe at most it's kind of has historic value, that some famous guy did this and, you know, people thought it was important at some point in time. But the $50 million is socially objective value. It's really what people were willing to offer in exchange for that art. It wasn't dictated in any sense. But I actually don't think that that's the sort of case that gives rise to the need for the concept of socially objective value. What Rand is concerned with is not primarily what we should make of irrational decisions by a handful of buyers, which is really a kind of a trivial issue. If you look at her examples, she mentions, you know, true crime versus Hugo, or lipstick versus microscopes. And it's not that any individual is necessarily being non-objective, but that the aggregate outcome seems to say that A is more valuable than B, when B, from a different perspective, seems more valuable than A. Like, are you saying lipstick is more valuable than microscopes? And Ayn Rand's point is that value presupposes an answer of value to whom and for what. When someone buys a lipstick rather than a microscope, they aren't saying that lipstick is better for man than microscopes. They're saying that right now, one of these is beneficial to me given my goals and plans, and the other isn't. And if I had to go to a doctor, on the other hand, I'm in effect willing and eager to pay for a microscope because now I actually need it. Now it's actually serving my values and my goals. So socially objective value gives us a perspective on aggregate outcomes that allows us to understand why there's no contradiction between saying Victor Hugo is objectively superior to true crime novels and that true crime novels are economically more valuable. You're dealing with two different perspectives. So what the socially objective, philosophically objective value distinction amounts to is maintaining the individualist perspective on market outcomes. So this is the way Rob Tarr puts it in his essay that I mentioned. Such products, i.e., you know, the novels Hugo or microscopes, may be objectively better in terms of their value, potential, or actual to human life, but better to whom and for what? The objective value perspective always stays cognizant of these two crucial questions to keep the concept value firmly grounded in the individual. Such products are only values to those who can and do creatively conceive goals and plans requiring the use of those products for their goal fulfillment. Forcing an object on someone simply because it seems intrinsically better, according to some abstract standard, by no means causes an individual to suddenly have, without any cognitive effort, special goals and plans vis-a-vis that product, which alone would allow him to value and use it. It is this sort of perspective that leads, for example, to an impoverished country building mega dams and superhighways because such things are seen as intrinsically valuable to human life. While the population is starving for lack of farm implements and private property protections that would allow individuals to invest in and acquire such objects as they actually need for the pursuit of their individual productive goals and plans. So let's turn to economic versus political power, which I think is one of the most important distinctions in objectivism, and I definitely think you cannot defend capitalism without this distinction. One recommendation here is Harry Binswanger has a really excellent article on this, The Dollar and the Gun, or The Dollar versus the Gun. It's reprinted in Why Businessmen Need Philosophy. But if you tell people, hey, capitalism is awesome, it's the system of voluntary trade, that usually falls on deaf ears because the reaction is like, what the hell do you mean voluntary? Like, if my choice is to take a lousy job at Amazon or McDonald's, how is that different from these companies holding a gun to my head? Now, you can say, like, look, that's not the choice people face, and indeed, Amazon and McDonald's have to compete for workers, and that's a great point. But so long as people continue to equate economic power and physical force and treat them as essentially similar, then the core value of capitalism, that it's extracting force from human affairs, that it's liberating us from the initiation of physical force, is meaningless. And if you even remember our discussion of physical force, we talked about how most people don't see force as a unique form of evil because they see it as interference not with their judgment or rational convictions, but with desires. And since all sorts of things interfere with people's desires, it's like, what's so special about force? And so I think this is part of what's at play in conflating economic and political power. It's, well, look, the boss pays me less than I desire and the government taxes me more than I desire. So in both cases, I'm just the victim of powerful people who are thwarting my desires. And the objectivist view is it's completely wrong to focus on desires, that they're completely irrelevant in terms of assessing the impact of like different actions or institutions on your life. The key issue is that in one case, in the case of economic power, someone is offering you a positive and you're free to reject it. You're free to go your own way. And if you do, you'll be no worse off than as if they never existed. They never made you the offer. Like if you don't want to take that job in an Amazon warehouse for $15 an hour or $20 an hour, you don't have to. And that it's just as if Amazon had never created those jobs in the first place. You're being offered a positive, not a negative. A negative is, give us your money or we'll throw you in jail. It's, we're going to take something away from you that you are entitled to. We're going to cut off options for you. We're going to stop you from acting on your own judgment. You know, if Amazon offers you a job at $15 an hour that's unpleasant in various ways, the point is you don't have to stay. You'll only stay if you think the alternative is worse. And so that is like whatever is unpleasant about a job represents, at least you're going in, you think it represents an improvement over your other alternatives. And if you stay, it's because you think this is an improvement over my other alternatives. It might not be great. It might not be my ideal scenario, but this is a positive. This moves my life in a better direction than it otherwise would be in. Now, that's not a full answer. Distinguishing economic and political power by stressing the way in which one is an offer of positives and one is negatives, it doesn't give you a full answer to defend capitalism, because the response will be, well, but Jeff Bezos is so rich, he could afford to pay his workers more or expect less productivity from them or whatever. He's being selfish. He should sacrifice. And that's true, but the point is to grasp how selfishness can be non-sacrificial, to see that it's the choice isn't sacrifice workers to Bezos or Bezos to workers. You have to get that economic power cannot compel people to act against their own judgment and interests. So it's maintaining the non-sacrificial view of egoism in a political economic context requires a clear distinction between economic and political power. And I really like here Leonard's analogy to knowledge. So he says that the fact that economic power is not a hindrance to anyone but a benefit to them is not unique to economic power. Cognitive power, he points out, like economic power, is real power. It allows people to achieve their goals better than ignorant people. But the way he puts it is, this does not mean that knowledgeable men succeed by exploiting fools, nor does it mean that an ignorant man is not free. If a fool wants to shape the destiny of society, but experts convince people to take an opposite direction, is this a case of coercive cognitive power? Only an egalitarian would say so. So, wealth, like knowledge, is not a fixed pie, and the more wealth and knowledge others have, the better off we are. Like, it's awesome that Jeff Bezos has so much economic power, just as it's awesome that Ayn Rand had so much cognitive power. Their power creates opportunities for the rest of us that we wouldn't have had otherwise. And this leads then to the pyramid of ability, which is a certain perspective on the kind of relationship between people with a lot of economic and cognitive power and those with less. And the point I want to make here, stress about the pyramid of ability, is why this is coming up in the section on objectivity. So what Leonard is arguing overall is that capitalism is geared not towards whims, but towards the rational human mind, and that economic power represents mental power. It represents the power earned by thinker producers. And so we get that everyone can flourish in a society because everyone has the power to act rationally. Reason is our means of survival. It's the means of every individual's survival. Everyone can be a thinker or producer and therefore thrive in a free society. But then it's the greatest thinker producers, the one with the most cognitive and economic power, are not exploiters but benefactors, because what they do is, instead of taking things from us the way that like a thief does, they magnify what the rest of us can achieve with their resources, their products, their example, their ideas. And so, you know, the opponents of capitalism want us to see a bunch of short-range greedy exploiters who can use their economic power to satisfy their desires at the expense of our desires. It's a whole clashing desires ruled by the powerful. And the objectivist view is, no, what actually happens is a society of thinker producers who dramatically benefit one another and are rewarded in proportion to the benefits that their mental activity creates. That's it for this video. Be sure to like it, subscribe to the YouTube channel, and as always, the best way to stay in contact is to go to donswriting.com and sign up for the newsletter. Talk next time.